happy contrived romance-based holiday.
No. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
My husband. Why you gotta...
Because here's the thing.
No.
I don't need a holiday.
You know what I want to do? I want to start this whole thing over again and be like, nice. And
single people get their nose rubbed in their singleness every Valentine's Day.
Every day is single people's day.
Well, I feel like every day is show some consideration to your romantical partner day, and that the idea that Valentine's Day is this sudden like, oh yeah, pay attention to the fact that you're in a relationship holiday seems ridiculous.
Listen, it's about time you paid attention to the fact that you're in a relationship.
How do I escape paying attention to being in a...
I'm bringing in my helicopter.
Clearly, yes. The Valentine's police.
Anyway, how I was going to start this podcast was, Happy Valentine's Day to you, Alonzo Duralde, my husband, who is the critic of the rap and the What the Flick.
And Happy Valentine's Day.
That's how I was. You know why? Do you know why I was going to start the show that way?
Why, Dave?
Because I'm kind and considerate. A tender, tender lover. That's what I am.
Happy Valentine's Day, Dave White of linoleumknife.com and elsewhere.
And what else am I?
My husband.
That's right. Correct. Gave you a nice Valentine's Day card this morning.
You did. I gave you one as well.
Made a delicious French toast breakfast.
Yes.
Just for you.
It was doubly French because you made them with croissant.
Okay, so I saw the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you're just like bopping around on the internet on all the different cooking sites?
No, but go on.
and you get to the thing where it's like five great cooking shows you're not watching.
I was like, all right. Are there five shows you're not watching?
It turns out that there are.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they like internet shows or something?
No.
Huh.
No. One of them, the one where I got this recipe from, was one that I was intentionally not watching. Because it has two things that I don't like.
Guy Fieri?
In the title. Brunch.
Uh-huh.
And Bobby Flay.
I have a problem with at least one of those.
The name of the show is Brunch with Bobby. I got no problem with Bobby Flay as a chef, although sometimes he does things weirdly. His gung-ho bro demeanor.
I still remember the time that
it's not Guy Fieri level, but
it's up there.
It's
I still remember when he did the Iron Chef thing where he competed against one of the Japanese Iron Chefs.
Yeah.
And then afterwards he like jumped up on his cutting board and was all like fist pumpy. And the Japanese chef was like
horrified.
You put your shoes on
the cutting board, yeah.
And he was rightly horrified.
Well, yeah. Here's the problem. He dumbs it down for dummies like me. And I admit, you know, I'm a dummy in terms of, you know, my skill set.
I don't think that's compared
to someone like Bobby Flay.
Well, fine.
No, see, you didn't let me finish that
sentence.
If that's
the bar.
Currently, in this sentence, that was the bar.
Fine.
And so, you know, I understand that my knife skills are garbage. I understand that if they weren't, I wouldn't constantly need Band-Aids in the kitchen. It's weird when he says things that you know he knows better. Like, he knows that he's telling you something that's appropriate for your level. It has nothing to do with his ability.
Sure.
I also don't like the way he pronounces croissant. Now, I'm not going to walk around saying croissant because I ain't French. And I would sound like a
A poseur.
I was going to say a dildo, but I would sound bad.
Yes.
I'm not going to sound like I'm from actual Texas, though, because folks, I have people in West Texas call them cross ants. That's wrong.
Maybe they were eating actual ants.
Here's how he says it. Croissant.
Oh, no.
Or croissant.
No.
He says croissant.
That's no.
He says
Bobby
croissant.
Flay.
Yeah. Stop. So it. He makes French toast with croissants today. Yeah. Now, I did put that episode in the TiVo. Just because I was curious to see if this listicle had anything to tell me that I wasn't paying attention to. I still don't like Bobby Flay all that much. And I don't like the concept of brunch, but brunch foods, they're breakfast. And that means decent.
No, and you should be
decent
clear.
Eating.
The only thing that you don't like about brunch is going out to crowded restaurants, in the later part of a Sunday morning.
There's more to it that I don't like.
You like hosting them?
Hang on. That's not true. You stop lying. What I like is to have folks over for breakfast. I don't want it to be at noon or 1 in the afternoon. I don't like the lateness of brunch because I get up really early. And I like breakfast when it's breakfast time. That's number one. Number
brunch
two,
is an 11 o'clock meal. I don't know where you're getting this noon business.
Number two, no, people are real into the whole, like, let's go to brunch. It's noon.
Well, the drinky ones.
That's number two. I'm not down for serving you cocktails with breakfast.
Right.
So I'm not doing that. Really, ever. And I don't like the mixing of afternoon, lunchtime, and dinner foods with the brunch thing. I don't want anyone eating a salad.
Oh, heavens no.
It happens. It totally happens.
That's they're doing it all wrong.
It's one thing to put some greens in an omelet.
Sure.
It's quite another to go down the real dinner route.
Yeah.
On this episode, he made that croissant French toast, and it's really good. You make it with the fresh croissants, not the stale ones.
Yes.
You get an extra eggy with extra yolks.
Mm-hmm.
Then, let's just say you happen to have a package of slivered almonds left over from Christmas, which is what I had. This recipe incorporates that. You brown up some butter, mm-hmm. saute the slivered onions in it.
Yep.
You pour maple syrup into that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And that's what you put on top of the French toast.
Mm.
It sure is nice.
It was real delicious.
Yeah. Hence, Valentine's Z.
I appreciated it very much.
That's true, you do.
And then you ran out and saw two movies back to back.
Uh-huh. Sure did.
What was your deal this week? How did you miss all the press screenings?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Hmm.
I know I didn't get any press screening for Zoolander.
No, I don't blame him for trying to hide that light under a bushel.
And on the night that it happened, I was seeing the upcoming horror film, The Other Side of the Door.
Oh, right. Yes, okay.
For this editor that I know, who can't get his real film credits to go off and see these things. Sometimes
it requires
an occasional pinch hitter.
Other things happening that night. That editor is very grateful that you fit it in your schedule.
Yeah, he yeah. Anyway, that editor needs to hire some more Los Angeles.
That editor
writers.
Is working on it. I promise you.
Because I'm not gonna sit around and let people say, Oh, I see Dave White's writing for The Wrap now.
Oh, please.
How'd he get that gig? I'll tell you how I got that gig. Being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I don't think anybody is resentful of the fact that you are very occasionally.
There's always that thing. You know, there's always that thing of being like, oh, your husband's your editor? How convenient. I don't want any part of it.
It is convenient, though.
No, for you.
For me.
Yeah, for you it's convenient. I can't find anyone to... None of my people will go to this film...
That's under embargo.
That's so I can't discuss its quality today.
It wasn't about the quality. It was that every... I
understand that, but yeah. Suddenly... Yeah.
It's all James Rocky's fault.
I know.
You know, he was my very reliable that local jerk. Person, but no, he had to go make blonde brownies for a living and leave me high and dry. But no, I'm working. I'm taking steps to fill the gap.
That's
there,
good. So. Yeah. Okay. So, I went to the Grove this morning and navigated my way around the LA Marathon.
Duh.
And we got to the Grove at 9:30 this morning for the 9:45 Zoolander 2.
Was anyone there?
About 8 or 9 other folks in there. Mm. And then we all got to stand around and watch a dumpster fire.
I was reminded of the press screening of Strangers with Candy, the movie.
Right.
Where I was in a room full of press people who were, and contrary to popular belief, you know, film critics don't always sit in screening rooms with their arms folded, awaiting the inevitable disappointment.
I do.
Horrible. In this case, with both Strangers with Candy and
What do you got for
Zoolander
me?
2, there was a vibe in the room of people like were upbeat and they were ready to laugh and ready to have a good time and wanted to have some fun with it.
Everyone was happy.
And then like there were a few scattered laughs early on, and then it got quieter. And quieter, mm-hmm. And you could just feel the air being sucked out of the room, and everybody just like, oh, this is not good.
I enjoyed the Strangers with Candy movie more than you did, but it was, I wish it had been better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie is a train wreck. It's like so many celebrity cameos,
None of them are funny.
An astonishing amount of them. Yes,
like, more than you could count.
Well, this movie's been knocking. The first one's been knocking around for 15 years. It's become something of a cult film.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure anybody they called was like, "Oh yeah, count me in." And probably even people they didn't call were calling them and saying, "Oh, I want to be in on this."
I'll tell you. You know what stunned me in terms of the cameos?
Mm-hmm.
That they got as many heavy hitter fashion people as they got.
I'm sure fashion people love the first Zoolander.
I guess. I,
and I'm sure...
I've never heard any... in print, I've never heard anybody talk about how much they loved it.
It's a movie that makes them the center of attention and is gently mocking Wah, but never so much as to, like, really undercut them. And so, you know, they're all dying to show...
Why do they all love Zoolander and yet they all had a conniption... over Ready to Wear in the 90s?
Well, Ready to Wear is a movie that kind of actively mocks them in a way. I mean, the ending of the film that, you know, has that designer played by Anouk Aimée sending all those naked women down the runway, you know.
Yes.
Or it just could be that...
Get
that,
it.
It could be that Prêt-à-Porter bombed and Zoolander was, you know...
They were angry about it before it opened, if you recall.
That's true.
Yeah.
Probably because I think maybe Altman came into it as an outsider, whereas Ben Stiller had created Zoolander for the VH1 Fashion Awards.
Yeah.
So he probably already sort of wormed his way into that world and everybody thought, oh, haha. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But obviously they were all dying to show what good sports they were by being in this one.
Anna Wintour.
Yes.
Has a speaking role in this film. Valentino.
Mm-hmm.
Has a speaking role in this film.
Mark Jacobs,
Tommy Hilfiger. Kate Moss doesn't speak, but she's in there with them.
One of the Wangs.
Alexander Wang.
Yeah.
They say Vera Wang's there too, but you never see her.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy. A crazy accommodation for this. Now, obviously, when you say yes, you're not asking for script before your day.
Right.
You're not saying, hey, can I see what goes on in this film?
Yeah, you get your page, if that.
Right. And so, you know, obviously they couldn't have known.
Yeah. What a...
The pile of dung they were about to step into. Okay, so Justin Bieber gets killed.
Yes.
It's the first thing that happens in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
the last thing he does before dying is take a selfie where like he's doing Blue Steel.
Right.
So
they go to Zoolander and they're like, find out what's behind all the killing of the pop culture people.
Pop stars.
Meanwhile, Zoolander
has been a recluse for 15 years right. after the collapse of the Zoolander Center for Kids Who Can't Read Good or whatever.
They killed
his wife,
Christine Taylor.
Although
his actual wife. Yes.
And then Hansel is off living in Malibu with a bunch of people
with his orgy.
Yeah, I tried explaining that to you.
I get it now.
He keeps referring to the people that he lives with as his orgy.
He has like 11 people that he lives with, one of whom is Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
And they are his orgy.
Yes.
All of them are pregnant, including Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
He has impregnated all of them. Think about that. How did he do that?
Derek and Hansel are called back out of retirement to walk in this runway show in Rome.
Right.
For Kyle Mooney.
Who is the sole...
The only funny thing
funny
in the movie.
Person in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who works for Kristen Wiig, who is obviously supposed to be like Donatello Versace, basically, right. but more so...
But like an alien.
Yeah.
Like a crazy...
Even more than Donatella is.
And the minute she comes on screen, you're laughing, and then she just keeps doing the same thing over and over again, and you're not laughing anymore.
You know everything about her character in the first minute that she's on screen, and she just proceeds to do that for the four or five more times that she turns up. And then when she and Will Ferrell are finally on screen together, you think, oh, this is going to go... No, it's not.
Not really. Benedict Cumberbatch has a cameo as... A model known as All.
Yes.
The joke is that All is trans.
Or gender non-specific.
Okay.
But the thing is, and I talked about this in my review on The Wrap, the movie doesn't seem to know if the joke is, oh, ha, ha, look at that trans person, or oh, ha, ha, Zoolander and Hansel have been away from the world for so long that they don't know how to deal with trans people. And then
there's not enough of a point of view in the film
exactly,
for
but
you
who
to
knows?
Know what the joke is supposed to be. But
as opposed to Tropic Thunder, where you knew what the joke was with like the you know the Robert Downey Jr. character.
In keeping with the stupidity of this film, though, I'm not going to give it any benefit of the doubt that it understands that a gender non-conforming person is not the joke. That ain't the move. Comedies, unfortunately, used to be able to get away with that. Those days are over. And good riddance to them. If you're still doing that in 2016, someone needs to educate you. This is get hard level kind of stupidity.
It is tone deaf. And, you know, there was a trailer with All in it that deservedly got a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder, like, before the backlash, was there more?
Right.
That they decided they had to sort of dial back, but they didn't want to lose the Benedict Cumberbatch cameo entirely.
Right.
Yeah, it's... Because when you think about Tropic Thunder, which trafficked in areas that were controversial, but were about... Tropic Thunder isn't a racist movie.
Right.
But it's a movie that is about
racism.
How...
There's a storyline in Tropic Thunder that is about racism.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, this movie is not... And the only reason I bring up Tropic Thunder because it was also directed by Ben Stiller. Justin Theroux is one of the writers here.
Right.
I mean, Nicholas Stoller, who wrote The Muppets, is one of the writers here. Like, these people should know better.
Yeah.
In general, like, this movie should be smarter and funnier, but definitely they should know better about the All business. It's
dismally unfunny from start to finish.
Yeah.
And nothing that they do works.
And it's not like the first Zoolander was this...
The ad campaign is funnier than the movie.
Yes. It's not like Zoolander was witty, but it was stupid in an entertaining way. And this one's...
It was endearingly stupid.
Yes.
Yes.
And it was at least aware of the line between the character's stupidity and not, and the movie not being totally stupid.
Right.
This is just dumb and lazy.
There's no joke in the film that doesn't find itself accompanied by one or two beats of dead air.
Yeah.
Followed often by someone either repeating the joke or explaining it.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And that's just deadly.
Yeah. I mean, and I saw this in a full room. I can't imagine how unfunny this would be in a large theater that had nine people in it.
Three of whom were just texting through the entire film. And when you go to the Grove on a Sunday,
yeah,
you have to leave all of your personal rules behind.
Yeah, there's no scolding.
There's no such thing as a Saturday or Sunday afternoon at a multiplex out amongst them where you're going to get your way in any capacity.
Unless you're at the Arclight.
Unless you're at the Arclight.
Where you can go tattle.
Where you can go tell on them and maybe someone will do something about it.
Yeah.
But at the Grove, you are just in the den of wild animals and anything goes.
Yeah.
And so when I walk, and the good thing about this unfortunate situation is that when I am at the Grove at this time of day, on this day of the week, it's strictly out of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So my capacity to care about what's happening around me
is like, oh, my sacred cinematic experience.
Greatly diminished. Yeah, I'm not, it doesn't. The movie that taught me that lesson, that finally taught me that lesson, was the Ashton Kutcher, Katherine Heigl movie. I don't remember what it was called.
Oh, Killers?
Is that the name of it?
Wasn't it?
Some generic title.
I think it was
like
Killers,
that.
Yeah. I think mine was Let's Be Cops.
Jen and I, it wasn't screened for us.
Oh, no. That was
when Jen was the critic alongside me at movies.com.
That was the one that Lionsgate said, we want audiences and critics to discover this film together.
She and I went to see that together at the Grove, first screening on a Sunday. Brr. Packed house, by the way.
Wow.
Full. And everyone on their phones. And I was just livid. But by the end of it, I thought, wait a second. Why are you angry? Of course, if you had one of those kinds of phones, you'd be doing the same thing. This movie is puke. an enormous bucket of puke. Zoolander 2 is also an enormous bucket of puke.
It is indeed. And it managed...
Put that on your poster. Your TV spots. Zoolander 2.
It managed to do even worse at the box office this weekend than How to Be Single.
Oh, is no one going to see Zoolander 2?
Well, not no one, but I mean, well, look, everybody's going to see Deadpool this weekend.
I see.
And
okay.
That's it. I mean, everybody's going to see Deadpool this weekend. It's making crazy numbers. Like, I think it's already outgrossed one of the Wolverine movies.
Oh, they goof on Wolverine.
I know, like because it's part of the X-Men universe, and I think it's got the biggest opening weekend of any of the X-Men movies.
It's nuts. That was the movie I walked at the end of Zoolander 2. I walked out of that and into Deadpool at the Grove, and it was pretty full, and it was in the big house, and there was texting going on there too.
Of course,
but again, didn't care. So no one is seeing How to Be Single?
Well, more people are seeing How to Be Single than are seeing Zoolander 2. But both of them are...
Really?
Yeah, both...
It's doing worse than How to Be Single.
Yeah. Both of them are considered fairly middling. Because Deadpool is just running over everything in its path. Deadpool is a four-quadrant hit.
Well, yeah, there were little children in the Deadpool screen.
Oh, of course. Well, bravo, parents.
I walked in during the credit, during not the credits, I walked in during the trailers, and I was actively scanning the crowd for... I was actively scanning the crowd for children. Which sounds...
Yeah, that does
that
sound...
That sounds like the wrong thing to say.
It does.
I was looking for parents who had brought their kids. Little kids. Like, under 10s.
Uh-huh.
And there were, like, four of them. Now, this is the big house, of course. So that's right. It's a lot of people. But I saw about four elementary school-aged children.
Well, Christy was saying that, you know... The Deadpool character is known to kids because he's in like the like Lego Marvel universe or something in the cartoons. And he's in like video games and stuff. So kids want to see this movie.
Deadpool.
And she had to write a whole thing for Rotten Tomatoes. Like, really, don't take your kids. Do not.
He's a rated R person.
Yes, he is.
He's a hard rated R person.
Yes, he is.
Can we just talk about it?
Okay. Why not?
Explain. You're the Comic-Con man.
Why don't you explain this? I had never read a Deadpool comic in my life, so this was all new to me, too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That was not your thing?
No, I was not a Marvel person in the 80s and 90s, and I wasn't really reading much of anything in the 90s. And he's created by Rob Liefeld, an artist that is not my favorite, but he did very nicely tweet that my review of the movie was his favorite, so...
Well,
thanks, Rob Liefeld. I appreciate that.
Ain't you a thing?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
The story behind Deadpool, as presented by the film, is that he is a mercenary named Wade Wilson, who is not entirely a terrible person, but certainly nobody's Boy Scout. He falls in love with a prostitute named Vanessa, who's played by Morena Baccarin, who's on Gotham, and she was Brody's wife on Homeland. And they have a very sexy relationship. Like, they're super into each other, and, you know, they exchange a lot of banter and a lot of fluids. but then he gets diagnosed with terminal cancer, and... gets visited by a shadowy operative who says that, you know, they can rebuild him, they can make him stronger. And he submits to this procedure, which winds up to be a prolonged amount of torture to basically force his recessive mutant genes to kick in. And they do, and he becomes indestructible and someone who can regenerate. But the downside is that the process has made his face look like 2 miles of bad road. And so he doesn't really want to tell Vanessa that he's alive. So he's in hiding, but he's trying to kill the guy, Ajax, who did this to him in the first place. And so he's, you know, the movie, it's an origin story, but it's kind of told in flashbacks. We see him going after Ajax, and then we get these long extended flashbacks explaining how he got there. He wears red because even though he can regenerate, he still bleeds a lot. He has the help of a bartender named Weasel, played by T.J. Miller, and an old blind lady played by Leslie Uggams.
Leslie Uggams. She was terrific.
She was great. And Reynolds is terrific, too. I mean, this movie is right up his alley, because the thing about Deadpool is that he's super sarcastic, and he's also one of those self-aware comic book characters in that he knows he's in a comic book, and he talks about the fact that he's in a comic book. And here, Deadpool knows that he's in a movie, and he makes reference to other movies of this universe.
He makes reference to Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, for that matter. And the thing is, I think it's a really tricky balance to have that kind of talking to the camera humor and still keeping us engaged in a movie that keeps telling us that it is a movie. But because I think the Reynolds-Baccarin chemistry is so strong, and because the revenge story is told so interestingly, we remain on board with it, even though, you know, he'll turn to the camera and say something that is very, you know, arch and self-aware. I was super entertained by this. I thought it was really funny. I liked the violent stuff. I liked all the superhero fighting when that pops up with I'm blanking on her name. Gina Carano. And Negasonic Teenage Warhead, who is apparently a character that I'd never heard of, but that's a great name.
That's a great name.
So, yeah, it's, you know, and I worry now, of course, that we're going to get some really crappy copies of this because people always learn the wrong lessons from when movies become successful and copy the wrong parts of it. But it's cool that this worked. And if we're gonna have this many superhero movies, they should change it up occasionally and have different things. Like when I was talking to our radio friend John Grayson this week, and I said, you know, it's like when the studios cranked out tons of Westerns, and you could have sort of dark psychological Westerns, and you could have musical Westerns, and you could have whatever else Westerns. If we're going to have this barrage of superhero movies, then let's have some that are self-aware and rated R, and some that are whatever, you know, like different kinds of them.
So there could be the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark movie.
Sure. Except no. I mean, maybe with an entirely new score and script.
I enjoyed myself
uh-huh.
watching this.
Okay.
I did not want to go see this movie.
Really?
Until you told me that I would like it. I am...
superheroed out?
I'm saturated. I'm fully saturated. I've got all the superhero juices filling up my entire sponge. Take that as you want. I would like to say that I enjoyed it more than I did.
Okay.
I feel as though we already have had this kind of smartass in the world of superheroes. Not this raunchy, not this R-rated, not this wicked, you know.
I'm not necessarily saying it's unprecedented. Who were you thinking, though? Like Star-Lord?
Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are elements of this tone.
Mm-hmm.
In the Avengers films, there are elements of this tone to a much lesser extent in the X-Men films. But absolutely in the Marvel world, this exists. Deadpool may simply be, you know, its strongest practitioner.
Well, what specifically? Like, are you saying, like, the Joss Whedon kind of...
Yes.
Bantery stuff?
Yes.
Yes. These movies don't sort of monolithically take themselves overly seriously. The Zack Snyder ones do, maybe. I don't know. But I'd say even on a Marvel scale, this is sort of next level.
It is. It is. I think maybe the self-aware, sarcastic humor tipped into smarminess at times for me.
Well, this is a movie that is very amused with itself.
Yeah,
and I would have that would have bothered me more had I not also been amused.
I was, but you and other friends. In just a short week's time, had built it up to be something that different. I was really going to dig, and that it, and yes, that it was radically different. And
gotcha.
It's not because that's not the word I'm looking for. Inevitably,
yes.
what ended up happening in this film is fight, 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 save the girl.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
And if superhero movies are going to be part of our lives forever until we're dead, and they probably are, I'm wanting them to move a lot faster in making the stories more than a wisp.
Well, but we also complain, though, that they're too often these movies are about giant global stakes.
Okay.
You know.
This was not about giant global stakes. That's great.
And I'd say also that the girl is...
But what it was kind of about was, you know, I'm ugly now. Will girls like me?
I think, though, that they at least give us a more interesting female character who is...
Yes.
on a great level, not on a superheroic level, but on a human level, more than able to take care of herself.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that I think there are increments here, you know.
Yeah, I'm just not feeling it as okay. much as you.
Fair enough.
And that isn't to say that I didn't enjoy myself.
Okay.
It's perfectly acceptable, raunchy, pop entertainment.
Yes.
I don't think it has meaning outside of itself.
I don't know that it does either.
And that is something that I think I would like more of.
Hmm.
You know, I need more than punch, 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 fight, fight, fight. I need more than that. Unless it's the raid. and that is your clearly defined narrative. That's your clearly defined boundary of activity. This world of the Marvel films, they need to become a lot more narratively, thematically ambitious for right. me if I'm going to continue to return to the theater for these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get letters, just you do know there's sort of two Marvel cinematic worlds, right?
Should I have known that by now?
Maybe.
Why?
Fox owns Fantastic Four.
I know.
And the X-Men.
Yes.
So their movies are off under their own umbrella.
Yep.
Disney owns Marvel and has pretty much everything else.
Okay.
Sony had Spider-Man for a long time.
Yep.
But after that last Spider-Man movie was such a disaster, they're now going to continue making and releasing the movies, but sort of under the Disney Marvel umbrella.
All right.
So that they can.
What does this have to do with me?
I'm just saying, very little. What's
your man got to do with me?
I'm just saying, if you're going to talk about the Marvel movies, I want to make sure that we're all clear about what you mean by that, because I don't want people writing in and saying that. Because the Fox.
Why should I care who the corporation is behind it?
Because in this case,
what difference does it make?
Because in this case, I would argue, particularly with the Disney ones, mm-hmm. that the corporation is the auteur.
Fine.
Let them
get more point of view-y then.
That's why they fired Edgar Wright from Ant-Man, because ultimately they're looking for more journeyman directors who will create films in the company style than they are for people who are going to do something individual.
Fine, and, corporation. Get it together.
Very well.
Yeah. And if your corporation is Disney or Sony or Fox, I don't care. I don't care which one it is.
I'm not saying you have to care. I'm just saying be aware that when you talk about Marvel movies, there's two different kinds.
All right. And I'm just going to keep throwing the question back in your face. Why? To what end should I be aware of the differences between the studios?
Because in this case, they are doing them.
Am I missing something here?
They're doing them differently, and also,
barely.
If nothing else, while they're being made by two different studios, those two universes are not going to butt up against each other. So Deadpool can make all the references he wants to other X-Men properties, and probably even to the Fantastic Four if he felt like it.
Yes,
but he's not going to talk about Iron Man. And he's not going to talk about Thor or Captain America.
Oh, they can talk about it all they want.
But I don't think they do.
I don't think they did, no.
Yeah, because that's a different studio. Again, this is minor, pointless stuff.
This is absolutely irrelevant.
I just don't want to be, pardon me.
You know what? I don't think we have anybody listening to this show that would be that nitpicky about this.
Oh,
and
I already got it on Facebook.
Oh, really?
From somebody who about my Deadpool review.
What?
Because I wasn't clear about talking about which, you know, Marvel I was talking about.
And did that person, is that person listening to this show?
I don't know. Maybe.
And did that person explain it to you? Why, in a way that makes any sort of who gives a damn sense.
He just brought it up as a point of clarification, and I responded that I made it a point not to ever use the phrase Marvel Cinematic Universe, because that's what the Disney stuff is all part of. This is like trying to parse the different synods of the Lutheran Church, all right? It's minor, but, you know, to the people who care, they care.
The day a truly important film comes out of this this world, then you can engage me with this conversation. So far, that hasn't happened. There have been some really good movies come out of this camp. Okay, yes. I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I love the first Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Captain America movies, but are they shaping my worldview? Are they shaping my aesthetic sense? No, they are not. They are great at what they do. I do not think they are important.
Well, no, and they're not designed to be.
And when one of them becomes important, I think we're all going to know.
Again, because, like I said, the company, the corporation, is the auteur here, because, you know, Kevin Feige and, you know, the whatever execs at Disney are running the show on these things.
Right.
On that side. I don't know.
Let's put the suits in charge. Can't fail.
I'm just telling you, this is not like, it's not like George Lucas is going to show up one day with Star Wars, because that was his thing,
right,
that he made.
No, I know.
And they let him, you know, he was able to make it within the studio construct and blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, a lot of people from TV being called in to work within very specific parameters.
Right.
And create a product that matches with the other product of the same studio. So, again, that's, if there's an auteur here, it's the company. It's not any of the individual filmmakers. So I don't know that any of them are going to be capital I important in that way. I don't think they're going to be calling Jafar Panahi to do the Ant-Man sequel, you know.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I don't think he'd be interested.
No, he wouldn't. I'm just kidding. He wouldn't care. But, like, you know. I just, you know, I always want something more than what I'm getting.
Well, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get
it. I ain't ever satisfied.
You're not going to get it from these kind of movies. These are not art films. These are movies that are designed to, you know, open big in China.
You know as well as I do that I'm not asking for an art film.
I know that. But I'm just saying, you're not even going to get, like, an artsy studio film.
I'm not asking for that either. I'm asking for something meaningful.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't think that's asking for too much.
No, I think it's not getting it.
I think it's a reasonable request.
They have toys to sell, Dave White.
Whatever. Toys.
So then, yes, How to Be Single, also opening this weekend for the Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And
I'm going to open an envelope while you talk.
Okay. not particularly good, but could have been way worse.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, easily. And you know that. We talked about this on the way home.
No. We argued on the way
home.
Yeah.
I think it has a few ideas in its head, and maybe they all come from the book that it's based on, which I've not read.
It has one or two ideas in its head. Dakota Johnson is a young college graduate who wants to go to work in the world of what again?
She's a paralegal.
But what does she want to do? Does the movie ever tell us what she wants to do?
The movie never really talks about that.
Does the movie ever tell us what she has, if she has any vague ideas about her direction in life?
Nope. Except that she wants to hike the Grand Canyon on New Year's Eve.
Right. So there's her. Rebel Wilson.
Yes.
Is her coworker
mm-hmm.
at the law firm and her party buddy.
Right.
Rebel Wilson likes to drink and have sex.
Yes.
And that's Rebel Wilson's character.
In everything.
Allison Brie. Allison Brie. Trudy.
From Mad Men.
She plays a walking caricature.
Yes.
Of a marriage-hungry young woman.
Right.
And that's Allison Brie in this film.
Yeah. Who is so tangentially related to the other characters in the film.
Hang on, we haven't gotten all the characters
yet. No, I'm not.
Then there's... What's her face?
Leslie Mann.
Christy Lemire.
Yes. Mrs. Apatow.
I cannot
it's
see...
It's eerie. I know.
I cannot see one without the other.
I know.
Leslie Mann plays Dakota Johnson's older sister, mm-hmm. who's a doctor.
An OBGYN.
And single.
Yeah.
Wants to have a baby.
Right.
But doesn't necessarily want a man.
Correct.
The end.
Look, my expectations in the as you are with superheroes, the romantic comedy is in a slump these days.
Oh boy, howdy.
And with few exceptions, you can pretty much just look at the poster and know exactly all the beats.
Oh God. I have been actively hate anticipating this film since the first time I saw the poster in December.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the poster. Here's the ad. The bus ad, the billboard ad, the poster, everything for this film. Dakota Johnson wearing funny sunglasses. Rebel Wilson.
Chugging a bottle of champagne.
With a bottle of champagne or with her arms in the air like, yay!
Mm-hmm.
Allison Brie holding a cell phone. Leslie Mann holding a glass of champagne because she's older and more sophisticated. And that is all the information that they give you on the poster. Do you know why? Because that's all the information this film gives you. Nothing. This film is about nothing. Zero things happen. It's insulting to human beings. It is furthermore even more ugly insulting to women.
See, I feel like I've seen way worse.
That's true, you have.
In this genre.
But not this month.
So, because there were a few surprises, and I laughed more than I thought I was going to.
There are 7 laughs in this film.
I'd go higher.
Oh, I heard you go higher in the screening. I was sitting right next to you.
I'm not.
And you were laughing.
I'm not apologizing.
And I kept looking over at you, like, what? What's funny? Where's the funny thing?
I may be an easy mark for jump scares, although less because I've learned to see them all coming now. But I'm not an easy mark for comedies, and this one made me laugh. Come on, when Colin Jost breaks up with Allison Brie by telling her, let's only see other people.
That was mildly amusing.
That was funny.
All right, fine.
I'm not going to catalog it. I don't remember them all, but I laughed not enough for me to go, this was a funny movie.
I didn't feel...
But not so little that I'd be okay. Like, that I was counting them.
The fact that everything in this film is about the guys that they either have or don't have. That's the movie. That's what drives me so crazy about this film, is that it is obsessed with the man and their own, their own narrative. The women is something that they just wrap up kind of quickly in the third act, if at all.
But see, that's one of the parts where I think this movie gets it right, or at least does something unexpected.
What, by?
If you see a movie called How to Be Single with four women.
Yes.
In the same way that How to Marry a Millionaire ends with three women getting married, although I don't think any of them wind up marrying millionaires.
Yes.
You would think that all of these women are going to get married. And it doesn't end that way. And it also doesn't end in a way in which the ones who don't get married feel bad about that. So it is genuinely how to be single in terms of, like, how to remain single and be cool with that as a way to live your life.
Living Out Loud
is a much better movie.
Oh, God.
I'm not saying this is a great movie.
No,
I'm just saying,
you're right about that.
I'm saying that it's tons better than it could have been.
It's thin.
Yeah.
It's barely filmmaking. Let's talk about it just from that perspective.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It looks weird. It looks like any other sort of, you know, sitcom.
Well, actually,
on television.
Matt Singer had an interesting point, and he lives in New York, and he talked about how he said that it actually was one of the better films he'd seen lately as far as using New York as a location.
Oh.
He cited the moment where Dakota Johnson's having that rooftop birthday party and she wants to sort of be by herself.
Right.
And she goes off and sits on that sort of high, precarious fire escape.
Yes.
And he says it's this sort of interesting thing where, like, she suddenly got this glorious view around her and that she is also isolated in the middle of this sort of thriving.
I cannot for one second imagine the film had that on its mind. Something would have turned up in a script if it had been that thoughtful about ideas of isolation or the absolutely sanitized version of New York City.
Well, sure.
Which apparently is the way it is now. Yeah. But I read very recently Richard Brody's review of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did he hate it?
Oh.
Because of its squeaky clean New York City.
Mm.
And Brooklyn feels gritty compared to this.
Well, again, going back to how to marry a millionaire, I expect a certain level of gloss for this kind of female-driven, you know, romantic comedy.
This is like if girls decided suddenly, okay, we're going to have, like, structure, and we're going to be much, much, much less interesting.
It's like if girls had gotten notes from HBO saying, be more like Sex and the City.
Right.
I grant you that. Again, I don't want to be put in the position of defending How to Be Single.
You're in that position.
I'm
now.
Not saying.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
what you are.
Awesome
now.
Movie.
You're the one who's in love with How to Be
I'm
Single.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying it's unawful. Which is, and I thought it was just going to be awful.
In the linoleum knife universe
of this table,
you're getting married to How to Be Single.
Fine. There were things.
Way to go, champion.
There are things about it that I like. It is a very flawed film.
I'm going to give it this. Dakota Johnson.
Yes.
Is very appealing.
She is.
And she takes this nothing burger and makes it taste like something every once in a while.
Right.
She's trying.
Yeah.
And
so is Leslie Mann.
She has the... when the film allows her to, she has the appropriate level of disorientation.
Hmm.
And that's really the story of someone who moves to New York City.
Sure. There's a lot of good actors in this, and they get, not Alison Brie, but I think a lot of them do pull something out of it. I think Leslie Mann has some nice moments.
Oh, Alison Brie is a good actor. That's not what you're saying.
No, I'm saying
she's given
nothing.
She's given the least
yes.
to do in
yes.
the film.
I think Leslie Mann and Jake Lacy have a real chemistry.
Fine.
I liked their scenes together. Christy was moved to tears, and while I was not... By Damon Wayans Jr.'s last scene with his daughter.
Fine, I'll give you that too.
So it's, there's some stuff here. That's all I'm saying. It's not, there's, it's not problems, and it's, there's a lot that's not good, but it, there's some
there's
stuff.
There's a here. Whole other movie going on with that Damon Wayans character.
Yes.
Why isn't that movie happening? Why isn't there a movie about a successful black man who is a widow, a widower?
Yeah.
Why isn't that a movie?
But the fact that he's in this movie and that his...
For 7 minutes.
But that he is considered a viable romantic opportunity for Dakota Johnson.
Yes.
And his race is never, ever mentioned.
That is correct.
That's not the norm for a mainstream studio movie like this.
I guess.
When we talk about, like, you know, when people say, you know, stop assuming that characters have to be played by men, or stop assuming that characters have to be played by, have to be white, you know, this is an example of that. Here's a character that any lazy idiot could have made just another white guy, and they made him Damon Wayans Jr., and they didn't make a fuss about it, and he's just there, and I, you know, it's a tiny victory, but it's a victory nonetheless.
I guess. I don't know. It's such a waste of time.
Fine.
This film is a waste of time.
Again, I'm not saying it's great, but it's better than it could have been. What's your DVD pick this week?
Paris Belongs to Us.
Hmm.
Jacques Rivette, who's finally dead.
Yes. Very recently passed away. Did we not talk about him?
No, here's what we did. We brought him up, and I said he was dead, and it was like a week before he actually died.
Oh. So it's your fault, basically.
And then in the middle of talking about it, I was like, oops, nope, he's still alive. I'm an idiot.
And now he is dead.
Now he is really most sincerely dead. And we were going to... We've been going back and forth on which podcast we're going to talk about
Out One,
because it was made for French television in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. But it is a film. And we've been watching it on our television with friends who are all in for the 13-hour experience.
Yes.
We're not watching the whole thing in its entirety, all at one gulp, like Mr. Rivette seemingly...
Said audiences should.
Said should happen.
We've watched like the first, what, three?
You're not my boss, dead Jacques Rivette.
We've seen like three-ish hours so far, so we're about a quarter of the way through it.
We've seen like three and a half. And Paris Belongs to Us shares at least partially its storyline with this first chunk of Out One. It's about people rehearsing for a play that never happens.
Okay. But this is, like a decade earlier, this is the French New Wave starting with Breathless and 400 Blows and this.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a mystery, and so is Out One.
Yeah.
Because I don't know where it's going.
No.
A good chunk of that first 3.5-ish hours that we've watched involve people doing this. They're rehearsing this sort of avant-garde versions of classical theater.
Right. But what they do in the film isn't not even rehearsal. It's more like
it's exercises
or acting games.
Body,
you know,
movement happenings.
Yeah.
You better be ready for it when you sit down to watch Out One, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I think
it's thrilling.
No, I'm into it.
To sit and just view that taking place is
Rivette
exhausting.
Yes.
And exciting at the same time.
Rivette likes to make movies about the artistic process. It's like watching, you know, Michel Piccoli paint Emmanuel Béart for hours in La Belle Noiseuse. I think it's Michel Piccoli. Anyway, it's there's no compression of time through editing here. It's just like it goes and goes and goes and goes.
So, yeah, Paris Belongs to Us, or Paris
Nous Aparté, I think.
Is that how you say it?
It's APPARTAEINT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nous Aparté.
Okay. It's a classic of early French New Wave cinema. It is essential viewing, and it is, I believe, available through Criterion.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm almost certain.
Yes, yeah, that's what you thought. That's what you thought about Diary of a Country Priest, too, but whatever. I'm actually going to recommend a book this week.
Why?
Because the character that Deadpool reminded me of the most, obviously there's some Bugs Bunny in there and even some Groucho Marx, but there's a DC character called Ambush Bug. And Ambush Bug, like Deadpool, is aware that he is in a comic book.
Right.
Sorry, I'm leaning over to pick this book up. He is not as nearly as violent as Deadpool, but nonetheless is as funny, I think, if not funnier. And I get a kick out of him. So if you liked Deadpool, and a lot of you did see the movie this weekend, and I think a lot of you liked it, you should check out DC Showcase Presents Ambush Bug. I think you will get a kick out of this character. I was going to pick Dayton Switch because it also features Dakota Johnson and Nicholas Braun, who play a couple in How to Be Single, but I've recommended that one before, so I wasn't going to do it again. So yeah, that's my pick this week.
All right. Lettuce. Pause the episode for a moment while I dig them up.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm pointing at you. Oh, yes, right. Go.
Here's a letter from Clint. Hello, David Alonso. Saw Hail Caesar, and I was mostly bored because it seemed like nothing of importance was happening. That was until the vignette with Channing Tatum. Mm. The scene starts out at a bar called The Swinging Dinghy, and Mr. Tatum begins dancing and singing to the song No Dames, which has double and sometimes triple entendre about men experimenting with homosexuality while away at sea. Favorite line from the song, I'll see a lot of you, you'll see a lot of me, we'll see a lot of sea. That was the most entertaining part of the movie for me. It was also the most informative. The song, like the movie, which starts with light metaphors until it starts beating you over the head with them. I am not a writer, and I cannot fully articulate my thoughts, but here was my epiphany. Hail Caesar is an allegorical movie about the Bible using a movie studio in the 1950s.
Uh-huh.
Eddie Mannix, Josh Brolin, equals Jesus. Eddie serves Mr. Swank, a man we never hear or see. That's God. Eddie washes away the messes, sins of the actors. The actors themselves would ostensibly be false idols. Eddie meets with four religious leaders. Those are apostles. Eddie meets gossip column writer Thora Thacker, who first appears over his right shoulder, bad angel. Eddie meets column writer Thessaly Thacker, who first appears over his left shoulder, who is looking for truth, the good angel. The entire Channing Tatum dance is Sodom and Gomorrah. Deanna Moran, Scarlett Johansson, is a follower of Eddie who is pregnant and unsure of the father, Mary Magdalene. Bert Gurney, Channing Tatum, introduced in a white sailor's uniform, joins the Russians in cloaked in black, heading down into a submarine, the Fallen Angel. I am definitely going to have to see this film again, because I'm sure there are other things I missed. Did you both come to similar conclusions? Well, we have now. I love this idea.
I think if you're going to be dragging like the New and Old Testament in it, you could take almost any movie and find some correlation.
Just like how all movies are The Wizard of Oz.
Basically, yes. I think it's a bit of a stretch, and perhaps you've overthought this a tad, but hey, knock yourself out.
Clint from Dallas, Linoleum Knife Patreon subscriber.
Well, then you're the greatest person alive.
I believe so. I'm into these ideas. I don't know if any of them are real or true or what the Coens had in mind, but that's a great like set of you know,
then who
possibilities.
Who is Baird Whitlock?
I don't know. this is from Frank. Hi, Dave, and Alonzo with an S.
Thank you.
Continuing to be absolutely in love with every one of your podcasts.
Well,
thank you so much for your greatness and fabulosity. I was listening to you all and Drew Droege talk about the movies of John Sayles. And I began to wonder if I could come up with 10 good to great, or at least entertaining movies that ring true about Texas.
Oh, because of Lone Star, right.
Okay. Here is my Lone Star knife list. Number one, Lone Star.
Okay. Yeah, I don't love Lone Star the way people do, but I like it.
I liked Lone Star.
Yeah.
Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. It's not a good film, but no. It's really entertaining.
I mean, yeah, but it's a very cartoony Texas, and Texas didn't need the help, you know.
Right. Giant.
Sure, yeah, oh yeah.
Both Rock Hudson and I have been read viciously by my grandmother. Him for not wearing a shirt outside the hotel in downtown Marfa during business hours.
Wow.
And me for a variety of sins. 4, true stories.
Oh, God, yes.
Boy, do I love true stories.
Oh, so great.
Paris, Texas.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Obviously, yes. 6, sordid lives.
Okay.
My mom went to secretarial school in Austin with a couple of gals from Winters, where Dal Shores is from, and she was mildly offended when I showed her this movie.
I can see that. Sort of is the kind of movie that you're like, I know people like that.
Dal gets rural Texas women,
mm-hmm,
of a certain age and era. He gets them down cold.
With unfailing accuracy.
Yeah.
Well, bless her heart.
Exactly. And Beth Grant, of course, is she's the star of that film. There is no one.
I am trying to quit smoking.
There is no one better than her.
She's amazing.
In that film.
Yeah.
North Dallas 40.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great one. Friday Night Lights. Which is a good...
Still never seen it.
It's a good film.
Never seen the movie, never seen the TV show. I know I need to see both.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Which is utterly fantastic, yeah. Boomtown. Do I know Boomtown?
With Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy?
I have not seen Boomtown. I'm not sure I know which film he's talking about.
There could be
about.
More than one Boomtown out there, but that's the one I know.
There is a film called Boomtown. Well, it's from 1940. There's another one that came out in 2013. We're going to guess that he's talking about Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy.
Okay. Never seen it. I just know of it.
Yeah. Honorable mention, Steel Magnolias.
That's Louisiana, right?
He says, Natchitoches is more like Carthage or Lufkin than Lafayette or New Orleans.
Ah, fair enough. No, wait, is it Natchitoches or is it Natchitish?
I don't know.
Because I know there's two of them.
Well, we have Natchitoches in Texas.
Right. I think the one in...
But this is Natchitoches.
Yeah, that's Natchitish.
Natchitish?
Natchitish.
Is that Louisiana?
Louisiana's Natchitish.
All right.
Texas is Natchitoches.
All right, sure. I don't even like the movie Steel Magnolias, so it's not right. relevant to me. Dishonorable mention, the Buddy Holly story.
Which I've never seen.
Apparently there are some hills in this Lubbock, Texas.
in
the Buddy Holly story. I don't remember that.
That's like the mountains in Rumble in the Bronx.
Yeah, I don't remember that being the case.
No Dr. T and the women?
No Bottle Rocket?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, Linklater, a lot of them. Dazed and Confused, yeah. Slacker. I mean, these are very Texas movies. Yeah. But Bernie is pretty great.
Frank, you're 100% knife.
Yeah. The other one I've never seen that I hear is supposed to be great is Eagle Pinnell's Last Night at the Alamo Bar and Grill, I think it's called. That's considered sort of this, it's a 70s movie.
Right.
And it's sort of the, like, kind of first big Texas indie.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
I've heard it spoken of reverently in my time in Dallas, but I've never seen it. Excuse me.
Now, let me see if I should. Okay. This one is from Dave K.
Oh.
Yes. I've been trying to think of a good knife list. And I think I finally have one. Good movies that were rated under 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Huh.
The idea is these movies aren't so bad they're good. They're actually good. Having a unique and interesting point of view. Maybe not altogether successful at what they're trying to do, but deserved a lot better than their critical reactions.
Okay.
In making this list, I found that a lot of movies from the 70s and 80s that had gotten horrendous reviews on release have now already had a reassessment. Three examples: Blowout, mm-hmm. The Thing, mm-hmm. and To Live and Die in L.A.
Right, because Rotten Tomatoes, as I've discovered, like, if you are a... If you review Blu-rays, say, you can post your review there. So
these are rated 90%, 80%, and 93%, respectively. Hmm. There is no way that was how they were treated at the time of their releases.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll stick with movies that still haven't really been reassessed the way I feel they should.
Okay.
And these are just off the top of my head. I'm sure there are a lot more. I would love to know your favorites. Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
That got 24. It stands at 24%.
Yeah, that movie's still misunderstood.
Jupiter Ascending.
Totally.
26%.
I'm quoted on the Blu-ray.
Exorcist II, The Heretic.
Of course this is a Kittredge list. I can see what people who love that movie see in it. I still find it kind of crazy.
Southland Tales.
I do not see what people who love that movie see in it.
I love Southland
Tales. You being one of them.
Boy, do I love Southland
Tales. I love The Box, which also was poorly reviewed, but not Southland Tales.
Looker.
I need to see Looker. I've never seen
Looker.
But see, now, I've always heard that's so bad it's good, but,
We Are Your Friends. Is he talking about the Zac Efron movie from last year?
I guess. I don't know of another one. That was dumb.
Showgirls, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Jacques Rivette would agree.
Exactly. 1941.
I need to see 1941. I've still never seen it.
I saw it in the theater when it came out.
Well, apparently there's
Totally enjoyed myself. Well, but I was a kid, so.
But there's now like a longer director's cut.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it pops up at the Egyptian every so often. I need to go one of these. I want to see it on the big screen and give it a shot. I love the Jitterbug number. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I would like to see it.
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I love what it's about, and I love the ending, but there's a lot of people lurking around a motel in that movie.
Yeah. Alien 3. I'm in.
I've never seen... There's supposedly some Fincher cut that is better than the theatrical one, which I've never seen.
I love all the Alien movies.
Even Resurrection?
Oh, yeah. Even Resurrection. Mad Love. I don't know
That's Drew Barrymore and Chris O'Donnell. Or is that Crazy Love?
I don't remember that at all.
Mad Love. I don't know. Look it up. Computer. I mean, it's an old Peter Lorre movie, but I'm sure that's not what he's talking about.
Right. Airport 1975.
Well, I mean, for sheer entertainment value.
Chris O'Donnell and Drew Barrymore is the first one that pops up.
Okay, then yeah. That's what he's talking about, I guess. Never saw it.
Airport 1975.
Yeah.
Black Hat.
No.
I want to see the re-edit. He just came out with a re-edit.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah. Miami Vice.
Didn't see it.
I like Miami Vice a lot.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Didn't see it.
Cruising.
Yeah. There's more there than originally meant.
There absolutely is. And of course, The Apple.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about subscriptions. If you haven't heard, we are now...
Wait, we have to knife him. Or was that out of 10?
That was out of 10, yeah. So you're not giving him
Black Hat. I'll give him the Alien 3 and Exorcist 2.
All right. You're 90% knifed, AFK.
Yeah.
If you're unaware of what's been going on with us lately, we are now entering the world of subscriptions.
Yes.
You are invited to join our club, mm-hmm. the Club of Linoleum Knife.
Be our Valentine.
To do so, you would go to our Patreon page. That's Patreon, Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
All one word.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this show
is free, will always be free. It is not part of anyone's subscription model. Right. But we have a whole bunch of other things that you can subscribe to.
Correct.
Starting at $4 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Going all the way up to more dollars a month.
Yes.
And at different levels of subscription, you get different things. Actually, they build on, you know, you get what's all, well, you get it, what's the levels underneath you.
If yeah.
You go for more. So far, we have been staggered by the fact that 150, as of this afternoon,
yes.
Sunday afternoon, 153 people have decided to subscribe.
Yeah.
To LKTV and extra other content that we are making and super special prizes.
Tangible
that,
goodies.
That, yeah, that you get for being a subscriber. It's blowing my mind. I assumed that, you know, a handful of people would be down for this. We didn't think it was going to be as big a thing as it is. And,
you know, we're flattered.
In the world of podcasts, obviously, we are still incredibly tiny potatoes.
Yes.
And other podcasts would laugh at us if they saw that we had a mere 153 subscribers. But to us, this is a gigantic deal.
Yes.
And so, thank you, people who have subscribed. You are, you're going to get your stuff. And people who haven't subscribed or are just hearing about this for the first time, go to Patreon, patreon.com/linoleumknife for all the information. A couple episodes ago, we broke down every level of subscriber, you know, prizes and money and all that kind of stuff.
It's all there on the page.
I'm not doing that anymore on this show. It takes too long. just go there and look. We'll provide you a link on the Facebook page and on Twitter this week as when we post this episode.
Sure.
So we're done.
So yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you to those of you who have subscribed for subscribing. And check out our friends in the podcast universe. Go to ChristyLemire.com and check out the latest episodes of the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and the Schmoes Know and Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Rotten Tomato Show with Matt and Gray, the Joel Ryan Thing, the Sewers of Paris, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the Game Night Guys, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. Thank you to Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. Find out more about everything he's got going on at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Also, check out, he's got a brand new music video that I posted on the Facebook page. It's really great. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's free. You can also leave us a nice review there, and it really does help people find the show in the mass of all the stuff that's listed on iTunes. So thank you if you've already done it. And if you haven't, please go leave us a review. We do really appreciate it. You can stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, join our Facebook group page, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you, and we will catch you guys next week.
Goodbye.